Welcome to Prusial Eye 52. Is anyone joining me today? Hello, Joe.
Hello, Mickey.
As you can see, we are in a different studio. Actually, we are in front of the AFS farm, the automated farm system. The downside is that the audio here is really echoey. So hopefully the sound is bearable. Let us know if the sound is okay. I guess that's my main concern.
I hope it will be all right.
I've been messing with it before the stream a bit.
Mickey, I think we are, you know, the extra for the farm, which will be the star of the show.
Sound works. Yeah, a bit echoey, but it is what it is. So I guess the first thing on the list from the news today is the PAC tool, which we announced on Twitter. So it's, we are going to wrap it, but that's not part of the tour, but that's an event in Chicago. But we're going to be in the US, so we're doing a little tour after that. We're starting it in New York, then we're going to San Francisco, and lastly to Seattle. I believe the Seattle event is already full.
Yes, but Mickey, you guys from Content, let me tweet out that we are going for USA tour, and my brain basically farted.
USA slash,
and you know, when I listed the cities where we will go, obviously the last city is Canada. So I'm sorry, and I promise that I will get some rest after this North American tour.
Yeah. So the Seattle one is full, but the New York and San Francisco still has some places left. So you can find it, for example, if you go to Printables and you go to events, and then you will see the link to sign up. So if you're in the neighborhood and you would like to meet fellow enthusiasts into 3D printing and makers, then we'll be happy to see you there.
Yeah, I am super excited about this because nowadays the online communities with all the trolls, it is just so easy to, you know, get in and ruin everyone's day.
Yeah. But in person, it's always like so nice and everyone is so friendly.
Exactly. You know, I think this is the time to invest into meeting person in person. And it is not just about meeting us, but meeting the fellow makers from the same city. Yeah. And my wish is that after our meetups, you know, some of the people will meet up after that, on their own.
Yeah, people will find out that they live next door to someone who is also really into 3D printing. Yeah, and also, of course, a lot of our team members will be coming as well. So we'll do some talks and we'll give you some behind the scenes and sneak peeks of what we are up to.
Oh yeah. And really, you know, especially with 3D printing, it might be a work or hobby, but it is still very physical. It is not something you can convey in a comment or a post on social media. So meeting in person and maybe bringing your cool prints to show us or chat about them with others, you cannot replace that with anything else.
That's true. Okay, moving on. This is a stream in April, and on the 1st of April, we did a little April Fools, and it was really hilarious to see. I mean, we like to do these jokes where we're only half joking and half actually serious, so it was really fun to follow social media and watch people realize that we did, in fact, manufacture a hexagon cross-section filament. And the filament guys even tried quite hard to make sure that the cross section, the area of the cross section is almost the same as the circular one. So it should print pretty much just fine.
It does.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reason it the gray or the gravity gray filament was used is that you can actually see the the perfect hexagonality with your bare eyes. And also, it's the reason that one of the faces of the spool is clear, so you can see on the spool.
Yeah.
And, you know, we made some stock before the April Fools, and I was thinking that, you know, we will sell a few, you know, 20, 30, whatever.
Yeah.
And the rest will be possible to exchange only for proof meters.
Yeah.
But, oh boy, I was wrong.
We got like, what, like 700 orders or something like
that? Yeah, we actually had to manufacture more.
Yeah, I know that the Purushaman guys were not like, you know, they were happy that it got a lot of orders, but at the same time, they were like, oh, now we're going to have to make way more. So that was a bit funny to see.
So this is what we do.
Yeah. Okay, from news about all the things that we announced and release about the kits of both Mark IV and the XL. Those are now currently being tested in-house, so our team members are assembling and disassembling and assembling more and more Mark IVs and XLs, so we're sure that the kits are great and that the instructions are clear and everything.
The pressure is high.
The pressure is high.
So, you know, as we mature as a company, we need to be more and more precise with our kits. And I think these two kits will be the best we ever did.
Also, it's a lot about the testing machines, right? Because we do test the disassembled machine, even as if it was actually, like the electronics doesn't realize that the printer is not assembled, and we like connect it together and spin the fans and try those things.
Mika, this is actually a good talking point, because on social media, a few times I noticed that people are like, well, the kits must be easier. Not at all, because with the full assembled printers, when we assemble it and print the test print, or, you know, try the printer as a whole, you actually, at the same exact moment, you are testing tens of the parts, which we have to test separately when we are talking about the kits.
Yeah.
So
those are the kits. And then what about XL multi-tools? I think the beta testers already have them for quite some time now. So yeah. Testing is happening right now, and depending on how long implementing the changes based on those tests, we'll keep you updated on when those will start shipping. Similar goes for MMU3, but that's tested in-house. And I think there's, in case of the MMU3, there's still like quite some testing ahead of us. So again, I think we'll keep you posted with everything that's going on, but I don't think there is like a day when we will know when the MMU3s will ship at the moment.
Yeah. Honestly, I would say, you know, a couple of the recent months, we had a lot of releases.
Yeah.
And if we would try to start shipping everything at the same time, it would not be optimal.
Yeah.
So we decided that the MMU3 will be released a little bit later than we anticipated, but I think it is a good call.
Yeah. Even with the MMU1 or MMU2, we always suggested that especially new owners would ideally put the machine through the hoops first without the MMU, you know, get to know the Mark IV or the Mark III as it is with just printing with single color, and then later on adding the MMU once you're more experienced.
So raise your hand in the chat who built the MMU together with their first game.
Yeah, don't do it. We always say that you shouldn't do it, and then we always see, like, I just assembled the Mark III and the MMU together, and this is the first print.
I am the same. You know, I skip the steps in the manuals.
And then I guess another really cool bit of news regarding Prusa Slicer. I think that the 2.6 is now feature complete. So the next build will probably be a beta, I think. Do you know if it will be beta instead of alpha?
I think the same.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned it, our alpha releases are something different.
Yeah, it's like
I feel completely cool to use the alphas we put out as a production. Just check the G-code layer by layer if you are using it for your business.
I'm using it all the time, so I think it's quite stable. But
oh boy, it might crash.
Yeah,
but it's about crash. One fifth of the time of the competing slicers.
What you're looking at right now is the even more advanced cut tool. So that's one of the latest addition to Prusa Slicer 2.6. And the change is that now when the plane intersects the model in multiple spots, you can just click on those and you can select which ones should be separated from the main body and which one should stay connected. So I think this was one of the things that was preventing from really the full potential the gut tool has. It's really fast. It's, I think, really intuitive. And now, since you can do this, I can imagine, David, our in-house maker making all the crazy big prints for shows, I can imagine he will be slicing like model 450 prints entirely in Prusa Slicer.
There are two things. People who never use CAD or modeling software, they maybe don't realize how difficult is this to do. And the second thing is, what people asked for was if we can add pins on the cutter.
Yes.
That was in like two alphas ago.
Yeah.
And this advanced cut tool is based on your feedback, guys.
Exactly.
And you really want that the fact that you can select the parts of the model on the cut surface amplifies this feature, 100 times.
I know that the team tried it and then they were like, this will be too much work. Let's just skip it. And then we posted the alpha and everyone was like, oh, it will be so cool if we could do this. So, the priority on that was bumped up and the team worked on it for quite a while.
I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize how long a feature like this can take. It is a year of life of one developer to do this, to get this to this stage.
Yeah. Okay, and I think with that, we are through the news section. We'll have a Q&A segment at the end, as always. So if you have any questions about anything we just talked about, we'll be able to get back to that. But I guess it's time for our guest, which can slide in right now. It's Alan.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Alan. So Alan is one of our developers, specifically our firmware developers. Alan, hi. Can you say something about yourself and what you do here?
Yes, so I developed the software running on the printers itself, and I'm here for, I think, 4 years. We are trying to count before the show. I think 4 years. I came when we were about to, finishing the Mini. Then I worked on the MK4, and now I'm working on the Excel.
Nice. So your first thing you worked on in June was the Mini.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just before the release.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of put it into perspective, because time flies, and when we said 4 years, It's hard to like imagine, especially in the COVID years and everything.
And most of the time it was MK4 for me and then Excel. So
yeah.
So before we start to go deeper, I would like for people to hear, how big is the Prusa Research framework team? You know, for all the machines.
So for the 30, for all the machines, I think it's about 15 people currently. Not everyone writes code, of course. And when we talk about the 32-bit printers only, about the FDM printers, that was for most of the time much smaller. I think, I'm guessing, but it was definitely under 10 people. Now it's a bit more. I think we are somewhere between 10 and 20 people.
Okay. Yeah. 10 people is the size of some 3D print companies.
Yeah.
But,
so I think one of the highlight features on the Mark IV is the automatic first layer calibration. You don't have to do any life adjust Z, and it just does it automatically. And that's done with the load cell sensor. And since we have you here, you're one of the developers who worked on that. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
I have some
history on it, right?
I will correct you. Yeah. He is the guy who made the leveling and all the smart stuff behind the load cell.
Yeah.
And what you mentioned, I will dig it out. I found a picture what was booted on my Flickr from 12 years ago, where I had the load cells on my printer extruder, even before the Prusa Research existed.
Like Mendel? Still?
Yeah, I will find it.
Okay. Mendel on the IT. Okay. You can dig that up.
So we can say we've been working on it for 12 years, actually.
Yeah, 12 years in the making, automatic first layer calibration. Sometimes it takes a while to get it. So I guess from the user's perspective, we can sum it up as since the nozzle is directly probing the surface, the advantage is that there is no longer the relative distance between the probe and the actual nozzle, so the printer doesn't have this unknown variable which the user has to input.
Yeah, exactly. So the Pinda sensor, the induction sensors, there are like two main issues. One is that we are not measuring with the nozzle itself, with the end of with the top of the nozzle, but with a sensor somewhere sideways.
Yeah.
And so it's a relative measurement, it's not absolute. And the second issue is that we are not measuring the surface which we care about, but we are measuring something beneath usually.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We are measuring the steel base of the sheet.
That's something that Joe brings up quite often, that when we measure the steel sheet, there is glue on the, in case of the smooth PI sheet, for example, there is glue on top of it, and then the actual BEI. So both of those things have some tolerance, they cannot be perfectly to 1 micron equal across the whole surface. So what you're probing is not the surface, and can be a small difference.
We are probing something underneath, and also like each type of sheet has it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I think the
thing that the users felt the most right after they got it right is that if they had two different sheets, if they switched them, they would have to change it, or they would have to do like, we kind of tried to make it as seamless as possible with the firmware. So we now have the, like, you can store several different calibrations for the different sheets.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, it was something the user had to do.
It's something you have to do when you unbox the printer. So
yeah.
Now that's gone.
Yeah. I think
people don't realize what is happening behind the scenes. We have three types of sheets, and with the Pinda and sensors before, you are sensing the metal underneath the print surface.
Yeah.
And even with the simplest of them, the PEI sticker, you know, the tolerances they might adapt. You know, there's 10 microns here.
Yeah, exactly.
And here, but as you are probing the surface beneath there's no way for you to know when this happens. And on the first layer, even 10 microns, maybe even 5, makes the difference if it's perfect or there are like tiny gaps.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is just set it and forget.
So now we have the load cell. So how does the load cell work?
Well, the load cell is just like a kitchen scale built in into the exterior assembly.
Okay.
So what we can essentially do is we can measure the pressure on the top tip of the nozzle.
So you get like a weight reading. That's like
exactly. Grams. Yeah, we actually measure grams. We have it converted in grams in some situations.
Yeah.
And so which solves the issues we just described. So now we are actually touching. We are measuring not relative. We have absolute measurements from the tip of the nozzle, and we are measuring the surface itself, not something beneath. And so that's like the general idea from 12 years ago, can I say? There is like a lot to make this work seamlessly and right.
You were telling me something. I think that's how a lot of our users and viewers also think that that's how it works. I thought it's like just a binary, it crossed a threshold. So now there's zero turned into one. And it basically behaves like the probe, like, oh, it says it's true now, so that's how we touch it. So that would be like the naive solution, but you were explaining to me that that's not actually how it works.
It gets much more complex.
Yeah, I imagine.
This, like, of course, we can use that for the simplest uses of the home, for example, for the homing, we use actually something similar.
Okay.
We apply some filters maybe to get rid of the filament pulling on the extruder and other forces. There are also like temperature changes, and so we have to get rid of those. And then we, for example, just for the homing, we use that threshold approach where we analyze the analog data, and we just are looking for some threshold.
But not for the...
But for the MBL, we do something very different. Yeah.
As you mentioned, the scales, the kitchen scale. You know, the picture I posted, I made it after doing the first build workshop in Aachen and Eindhoven in basically the first ever workshop. And I had the idea, and we went to the store and bought two cheap
kitchen scales,
you know, disassembled them, and I made that thing.
Okay.
But, you know, I was never a good programmer to be able to implement this. So I'm super happy that, you know, my team grew to this scale, and I got so... such talented people that we can have this in a production printer, because there are others who implemented the same thing, but it is just binary, on and off.
And it kind of works. Like, you can do it with the binary approach. The problem is that it will still require some calibration. We can go into that more.
Maybe a trim pot. No.
Yeah. But so there, it has a lot of small issues, but it generally also works. But it's not like print and forget.
Yeah. So how do we do it? What's the better approach?
So the main difference is when we actually probe for the MBL, and we actually just probe, as you can imagine, we just dub the bed.
Yeah.
But the important thing is what happens afterwards.
Yeah.
Because we record all the data. We record the Z coordinate, we record the load cell analog data for the whole type, and then we analyze it. And that's like the source that makes it actually behave as it behaves. Because for example, with the binary approach, the problem is that you will have some threshold, like, I don't know, 150 grams. So when it's over 150 grams, you say this is the Z coordinate.
Uh-huh.
And then you start having so many issues. Of course, you can have dirty nozzle. You That's a like one yeah. huge issue.
Like filament leaking from the nozzle.
Yeah, exactly. So other thing is that for different sheets, you will get different readings in different yeah. heights because the pay sheet yeah. is
softer.
Softer, so yeah. it's gonna trigger at a different height than yeah. the satin sheet, yeah. for example. And also, you will get different readings in each portion of the bed because it flexes differently yeah, yeah, at yeah. each point.
So you were saying that we have like tens of thousands of data samples of
yeah.
this probing, and the way we do it, that there is a model.
We currently have much more.
Okay. Yeah.
But at the time when we were actually building this model, we've collected tens of thousands of mm-hmm. those taps in very different conditions. With plastic, without plastic, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then we trained a simple model to recognize the conditions.
Okay. So that's why when there's like a little PETG leaking from yeah. the nozzle and it taps, so the model like recognizes this.
Yes.
And that's why it then like squishes the filament to the sides, moves a bit to the side, and then it taps like 2-3 more times.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then it waits for what? When the model like is happy with... like it recognizes that this is a good tap?
When it classifies it as a good tap, okay. it moves on. And this solves the issue mainly of the dirty nozzle. So this solves it for us, but it doesn't solve the issue with precision. Because yes, you can classify a tap whether it was
yeah.
good or not, but it doesn't solve the issue I described with the binary approach where you have the bed flexing differently and so on. And that we solve differently. We actually like reconstruct the probe afterwards.
Oh.
And we look at all the data and we try to calculate back where we really hit the bed, not when we triggered and
yeah.
so on.
Yeah.
But we try to reconstruct where the bed itself is, not where we stopped,
yeah.
for example, and so on.
Yeah. I would like to say that when we got this out, that there were some people trying to, you know, diminish how well we made it. And without even looking how we implemented it, because the printers on the market, they use like really the cheap metal lip of a holder for the nozzle where that's the lips are. So they were saying, oh yeah, when you crush the nozzle, it is done. Or you have to constantly recalibrate it because there is an analog comparator and
yeah.
it is just acting as a normal end stop. You know, go and see our videos where you can see the whole integrated.
Yeah, it's like hidden in the heatsink, right? In the metal.
You cannot
damage it.
You cannot destroy it.
Yeah.
And it is placed in a way that we don't just sense the taps. We can do many more things in the future.
Can you, for example, if you look at the like raw load cell data, can you see like the spool pulling on the?
We can see like a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so we are currently like looking how to extract some of the components.
Like for example,
there's a lot of interesting information we can get from the load cell.
You know, the spool often like doesn't roll uniformly.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a tension building and then it like pulls over and the roll
yeah.
spins. I
yeah,
guess
yeah.
that's also visible.
Yeah, or when you have a knot or when it gets stuck, the filament
yeah.
on the spool, we can immediately see that. We can see a nozzle clock. And so on,
cool.
so on. So I'm sure this is just like a beginning
yeah.
of what we do
yeah,
with the load cell.
And there is a super cool thing, which I don't think most of the general public who is interested in our printers noticed. But if you really want, you can get all the sensor data from the Mark IV
mm-hmm.
into Grafana.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
By the way, hi to the...
Hi, Grafana people.
Grafana team.
Yeah.
yeah. That does a lot.
we are such a huge fan. But, you know, this is how we were able to perfect this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we were not doing it in the dark. We had, I don't know, terabytes and terabytes of the data.
I think we can say that all the printers here behind us printing, we are currently streaming all the sensors from those from those printers, and all the other printers in this building, we are streaming all the data from them to our servers, and we are actually like then processing them, and that's like very helpful to actually debug very rare scenarios and so on. Because we just see everything what's happening there.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the highest and the craziest mode, you can actually reconstruct the print from the data and graph from the positional reading.
Yeah, we have all that. So yes,
like voxel model of the actual.
Oh yeah. And, yeah. You know, there are positional data from X, Y, Z, E, and you can really reconstruct the print from it.
I guess worth noting for anyone who's thinking about it, no, your printer is not sending the data anywhere. Just our printer is here. Your printer is not sending any of that anywhere. Yeah. Unless you want to, and unless you set up your own Grafana. I think we will be posting some guide for that.
We are not rich enough to be able to host such a big server that would collect all the data from all the printers. And I think, you know, recently I'm very, very concerned about my own privacy and, you know, and my company privacy. I'm thinking that not having a full-blown operating system running on the printer is actually quite nice.
Blessing.
And the fact that you can read what it does.
Yeah,
but we can say that this all is also open source, so there will be, I think, some guides in future how to set this up locally for people who want to experiment with it.
That's a tease of something we're gonna get the firmware and open source, like people can read it and everything. We're gonna get there soon. Just finishing up on the mesh bot leveling, I guess another nice thing is how fast it is. If you want to see the print starting.
Yeah.
So
that was like initial concern when we started. I think like 2 or 3 years ago, we were in a state where it was actually precise already, almost. But the main concern was that it was very slow, and we wanted to increase the mesh to 7x7 grid, which makes it even longer if the probing is slow. And yeah, so that's also why we have the model which classifies the taps. Because of course, other approach would be that you do multiple readings at the spot, and then you look at the data and try to compare them whether they look okay. But with this model, we usually do just one tap at a point, and if it's good, we just move on.
And also something I saw is that the printer only taps where it's going to be printing.
Right? Yes, of course.
Yeah, which is nice.
It just makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense, really. Why would you tap the corner when you're printing a bench in the middle?
Which I think was your idea some time ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a revolutionary thing.
It is the thing that you realize later, like, why are we tapping somewhere where we are not going to be printing.
And so, also
and
this
on the Excel, it makes a very big difference.
And this also seems like super easy to do, but then I remember like some early version where there was this case where there's a small footprint on the bed, and then the model grows with like overhang. That's fair enough. And there was some wonky extrapolation happening.
So as always, there's a lot of bugs on the way, but we are currently not only interpolating the data into the mesh, but we are also extrapolating out, because otherwise that was like a nice... It looked like a non-planar printing, I remember that. Like everyone looked at it and said, what's happening here? But yeah, there's a lot of things to get tried on.
But when we get the things we need to get out, we already talked about doing a sort of high-res version.
Yeah.
Because the biggest testament how well this works is that some of the very early reviews or videos of the machine, people were like thinking, balls of wood.
Yeah, and cardboard.
Cardboard. Yeah. It kind of worked, but yeah. we can do it better.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking, you know, if we make a customized nozzle and we enable the firmware to do that, we can do something sort of between the regular printing and the non-planar printing, which, you know, the actual people could use.
Like printing on something that's not flat.
Yeah.
I've already seen models from colleagues who are actually trying to use the nozzle as a 3D scanner. So they just like put a knife on the sheet and they scan it. It took a long time, but it worked and they had a nice model from one side of the knife. So yes, there's...
My internal benchmark would be, you know, to have a cap, a hat, where you could, you know, probe the, how do you say, the shield?
I have no idea.
Yeah, like, not visor, the thing that froze you.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Blocking the sunlight. So,
yeah. Curved surface. Yeah. I think the goal should be that we can print on that, you know, maybe from a flexible material. I think that would be fun, and you know.
Yes.
And one more note: we kept the live adjust Z in the firmware. You just have to press the knob.
Yeah, if you hold the knob,
it's hidden, but it's there.
But it is especially for these special use cases.
Yeah, like t-shirts, printing on t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah. When you are probing something what is squishy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And our, you know, generalized preset wouldn't work.
Yeah. All right. So we are speaking about, let's say, a sensor, but actually basically everything we're talking about is firmware. So that's, you know, that's everything is done in the firmware. So we have two new firmwares being made parallel to each other. We have the 5.0. which is the firmware featuring input shaping, which I guess is what everybody's excited now. So that's being tested in-house right now. But also we have 4.6, which will come, tomorrow or something?
I hope it's going to be tomorrow.
Yeah, okay, cool. So what's in 4.6?
So the main goal was to just like get all the feedback from everyone using the MK4s and XLs out in the wild and incorporating that feedback. So there's a lot of like small bug fixes and improvements making lives easier. And then there are some, there are a few new features.
Okay.
One of them is support for backward compatibility for MK3.
We saw Uncle Jesse's stream. He started a Mark III G-code on
it. It doesn't go well.
Yeah, so now it will be just fine.
It will be just fine.
I have to say, I'm sorry. This is kind of a shame that I didn't think to test this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just makes sense to have this.
Yeah, it's compatible.
So it's there now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Especially for people who have large farms and they are just churning out the same print over and over again.
You don't want to reslice everything.
Yeah, and you get, you know, a couple Mark IVs to your fleet.
Yeah.
It should just work.
Yeah, you won't have to worry. Maybe it will not be as fast or something, but it should. So it will now.
It will work.
It will work. Yeah. Okay, then we also have faster Prusa Link, mainly Wi-Fi.
We are optimizing the transmission rate. So Wi-Fi is now almost as fast, I think, as Ethernet. And we are still working on it. So I think there are going to be future updates which are going to make it even faster.
Then we had Power Panic, some fixes to some edge cases.
It's usually very rare edge cases. I think in general, we've tested the firmware for a long time and it works in 99-something%. But yes, there were some edge cases in Power Panic, in crash recovery and so on. So we are improving that, of course. And there's a new UI on the home screen, I think.
Yeah, bigger buttons.
Yeah, I mean, and credit for Mickey for this, because he was like, hey guys, Why do we have original Burson Mark IV on the LCD when it's just printed on the LCD cover?
We're like, oh yeah. I hope I wasn't too annoying to the firmware team, but sometimes I do this. Yeah, it's true. So yeah, bigger buttons. Then also some improvements to the like more robust USB. I guess that's just if you have a bad USB flash drive or something.
If you have a good one, you usually don't have a problem, but there's a lot of problems with some USBs and flash drives. So yes, we are improving that also. And there's like so many of those things that but so mostly it's small improvements making the firmware just like
Which one I'm really happy you've added. I've bugged Alan that I installed a 0.5mm nozzle on my Mark IV and I was clicking through the hardware setup and there was like 0.25, 0.4, 0.6, 0.8. I was like, I cannot set a 0.5. So
So we listen to
your feedback.
And just 0.5 also.
Very much appreciated. So because the G-code check was it was like telling me, oh, by the way, you have this sliced for a different nozzle type, which is a nice warning.
But it's annoying when it's actually not true.
Yeah, when it's actually not true, it was a bit annoying. So that's nice. But yeah, also some things for the XL, which brings me to the topic of. So the Mark IV and the XL have the same firmware.
Yes.
That's so cool. And how does this work?
So that was a lot of work in the last years because we started, when I came in, we started with a firmware which was just for the Mini.
Yeah.
And now we are using it for printers, right? For
this is one of them.
IX. We are using it for the XL, we are using it for the Mark IV, for the Mini. We are also using the same code base, the same firmware on the dwarfs of the XL and so on. So the usage like...
The tool heads of the
XL. So the requirements for the firmware changed a lot in the last years. And that was a big part of our work to get the turning everywhere.
Actually, when you mentioned the dwarfs on the XL, even though it was out with the articles, I don't think people realize what is happening with the multiple boards on the XL. I think less than 10% of people realize that each tool head is running their own firmware, and everything just has to talk together, and the main board is flashing the firmware to
exactly. It increases the complexity quite a lot because instead of one firmware and maybe one bootloader with the Mark IV, you have essentially like two applications, the bootloader and the firmware.
Yeah.
On the XL, you have six of them. You have like three bootloaders, three firmwares, and everything has to talk to each other. And so that's a lot of work. Yeah. So like XL stands out in comparison to the MK4 and the Mini from the architecture perspective. It's quite different and a lot of things had to change to support it.
I'm also bringing it up because this firmware 4.6 has a lot of things for multi-tool XLs, which no customers have yet. So why are we adding it there? Because the beta testers have it. So it's introducing a lot of features there. I know that now the tool heads, there is now the thing where the heating management, where the parked tool heads cool down and heat back up when they are needed.
Yeah, there's a lot of those things for the multi-tool. So currently we are focusing a lot on the multi-tool support because we are doing iterations with the beta testers and improving things. And of course, one thing we've just added is the support to automatically cool down and heat up the unused extruders, because you might have some filament that actually is going to degrade if it's not going to be used for some time. And on the XL, you might not use it for a long time because you can be printing for 2 days. So you don't want to have the filament being preheated for 2 days there. It's going to turn into stone or something like that after 2 days of higher temperature. So a lot of things like that.
There are so many cool little details in the Excel framework and how everything works together. But, you know, we need to do a dev diary about this. But just right now, I don't want to take your time, you know, from getting it polished for shipping it. But, you know, it is just so cool. But when you put it out, check the firmware. If it's not right, it flashes the other boards, not just the extruders, but the heat bed controller.
Exactly. Like just managing the modular bed to heat up the tiles. It seems like, okay, that's gonna be like super easy. And then
I feel like the heat bed controller is like maybe more complex than like Mark II or something. like it's a processor and it manages 16 different tiles.
Measures the resistances of each of the bed lengths and it actually like tries to work in a way to prevent warping of the steel sheet on top of it and also like not to make too steep gradients of temperature between the bed lengths. And so there's a lot of going on also.
Surprisingly complex for just, you know,
or just like heating up.
Please heat up to the right temperature. Yeah. But yeah, it's quite something. And also, I guess one last thing is the tool offset calibration. That's also based on the load cell sensor again. Yeah. But that's like the little metal pin that the nozzle tap, like each tool head taps it.
Exactly. So with the Excel, there comes like more calibration because when you assemble the printer, you know, have to know first where how to park and unpark each tool. That has to be like precisely calibrated. So that's one type of new calibration we have there. And a second one is, you just mentioned, is the tool offset calibration. Because when we grab one tool, we don't know where the nozzle is in relatively speaking to the other tools when we grab the other tools. And you want to have those aligned when you print something.
And
right?
Each can be like,
and it
like
might be like, it might be just like 100 microns, but it makes a difference.
Yeah.
So what we, again, use the load cell for that, you just put like a little pin on the bed and the printer takes each of the tools and taps it from all the sides and calibrates it so it actually knows what the offsets of each of the nozzles are.
I would say when we were testing how this load cell thing might work, you know, with our requirements, one of the tests was that we were homing on top of an edge without breaking it.
Yeah.
So that is how sensitive it is.
Okay, I guess we can go into the Twitter contest. So we have still some time for answers for the Q&A, questions and answers from the chat. We go to this stream's winners of the Twitter contest. We start with a shout out, kind of related to what we were just talking about. And this is a multicolored print in the same layer, but without the MMU or without the Excel, without any custom hacking of the G-code. So Oscargo doesn't actually share how they did it, but I suspect that it was like a multi-tool setup with M600 color change to a G-code instead of the tool change. Uh-huh. I think that's how I would do it. But yeah, anyway, really nice result. So I thought I would just bring it out as a little shout out. Okay, then we're... Oh yeah, maybe I will be. Not that there's anything secret really. But... now we're going to our number three. And that's Martin Volker with his Mark IV. We know Martin, he's been posting a ton since even before he got his printer.
Hello.
This just keeps popping up. Congrats, Martin. And this is like a little holder for the ear cleaning sticks. Oh, I don't know what they're all called.
Should be used for ears, actually.
Yeah, that's true. Doctor always says, don't use it.
I do.
I do it as well. It's really satisfying.
I do also.
I'm just thinking.
Not a good example here.
I'm just always thinking. Yeah, I would know if I'm messing something up, right? and I will have this this in my house until I break something in my ear.
Yeah.
Okay, and we can move on to our number two, which is Ratafiki, using the new organic supports in Prusa Slicer to get like a really clean print with the, I think, I don't know if this is Prusa and PLA marble gray. It could be. It looks really close like it. But yeah, just imagine how this would look with normal supports.
Yeah.
And like, how impossible it would be to free the print without damaging it, like the cape. And
I mean, you get used to these things so quickly.
Yeah,
you
know, just like
half a year ago, you wouldn't even attempt to print.
Exactly. It's just how I think it was printing also.
Okay. That's great. And our number one is Barry. Barry, I think, won at least on another occasion. But yeah, it's just really a wild Scooby-Doo Scooby-Doo colored print. So congrats. It's just, it's so clean. It's amazing. It's hard not to award it. So congratulations to all the winners and also to Oscar for the shout out. And yeah, now we have some time for the Q&A. And I'm sure you've been looking at the chat the whole time. I'm also peeking at it. Yeah. And I know there were a ton of questions, so I will try to find some, but in a while we do that, you can also post them again.
I was looking at it, but I just got this new super tiny iPad.
And oh yeah, it's
very tiny.
It's nice.
And initially, I didn't catch many of the questions.
Yeah, so status of the multi-tool, toolhead Excels, as we were saying, currently in beta testing, implementing the feedback from the testers. As soon as that's done, thing will be ready to ship it. We'll keep you posted. I see some things about Connect. By the way, Connect is it's been getting some updates quite a lot, especially the visual ones.
I mean, I would say, everything changed.
Yeah, everything changed.
Just recently.
So
there was a huge, how would you say it? Reimagination?
Yeah.
You know, everything was, you know.
Yeah, a little bit. So if you have a Mark IV or, I don't know if Mini, I think Mini not yet.
Not yet.
Not okay. yet. Or if you have a Raspberry Pi, you can just connect it to your Mark III and add it to Connect. It's nice. Or Excel. It's especially nice, I guess, if you have two or three, then like it's nice that you see. I have a tablet like Joe has here on the farm, like the small farm, and then you see like the sprint will finish at this time and this time. It's quite nice. Single head assembled Excels are shipping. Kits are being now just tested, they're done, so also should start shipping reasonably soon. Yeah, Prusa Connect for Mini, definitely coming. I know they said that they're working on that. I'm not sure about the exact timeline.
Yeah, my call on prioritizing these things is to fix all the possible things with Mark IV and Excel before, you know, putting the man hours on Connect for Mini.
Yeah. Will the Mark IV get stealth mode? It's basically always okay. It's like a bit strange. The non stealth chip is quieter or like quiet on the Mark IV, just as is. So, and it would lose things like curve detection or
exactly.
other things. So. It should be really quiet. I saw a few where they weren't, so those were like something was wrong with the printer, basically. The user switched to support and hopefully they resolved it, but my Mark IV is super silent and all of them should be, you know, reasonably silent. I'd say, you know, we're saying silent, like if you know the Mark III, it's about as quiet as the Mark III. which when you enter the room, you're like, oh, the print finished. And then you're like, oh no, the printer is actually still running. The printer is just really quiet. Yeah, well, Hardin nozzles, definitely. The adapter, I think it's sold out now. We sold so many, the next to their nozzle adapters.
We are, you know, putting it in batches on the,
yeah,
so, on the eShop, so
okay,
no one could speculate,
okay,
at buying all of them.
So we're adding more and more. We also have some 0.6 and other nozzle sizes available for the next Truder, like without the adapter, and hardened are coming, but probably not super soon. I think
you can buy E3D.
Yeah, just buy. I mean, you can buy Nozzle X on our
But same with Revo. We are waiting on the guys to help us with the 8-bit firmware temperature model.
Yeah. Some people in chat are saying exactly, like, you can get the adapter and whatever V6 nozzle that's very resistant that you like, or that you already own, actually. Russian and PCCF, good question. So we restocked.
Finally.
Yes, but the first batch was like sold out in, I don't know, hours. But Martin was saying that the next batch in May, which soon, should be really large. So the next restock should last sometime, hopefully.
Yeah. We had a problem with consistency of the carbon fiber?
The fibers, yeah.
So, you know, if we would give up and use whatever we had, it wouldn't be the same as the OG, yeah, PCCF. But we finally got it.
Nice. It's my, like, after PLA, which is PLA is just so easy to render with, it's my favorite filament. Like, PCCF is, like, magic to me. Really, it sounds like ceramics or something. Yeah.
I remember the live when we were announcing it and I had like huge, yeah, thing and I was banging to,
yeah,
it. And it sounded like ceramics.
I had a model where my plan was, I printed the model and then I had like a shape that I would heat bent it. So I was blasting this hot air BCCF and my hands were burning and I couldn't twist it. And the model, it was so thin and it would just not bend. It was actually annoying at the time when I like, oh, this is really heat resistant. Yeah. And that's not even mentioning the BA, which is even like that can withstand even higher temperatures. Oh yeah, Scott is saying that some Prush employees are on the Discord channel and that it's nice to chat with them. We could get some more, I guess. If any of them are watching, like, go to our Discord and chat with those guys. It's fun. Yeah, more textures in Prusha Slicer like fuzzy skin. So you can use fuzzy skin with a modifier to like paint images, which is kind of fun. Or even the text, the new text tool, you can use it as a fuzzy skin modifier. So you get like a rough text on a smooth surface. But I think the team is cooking some more cool stuff in that. It's probably not going to be 2.6 since that is feature complete. Oh yeah, I think I saw that somewhere very early on where we talked about the load cell. And that's what I thought as well, that when the nozzle taps the smooth PA sheet, it like leaves something. And I thought that it's like a dent, but then I found out that it's the filament that got squished to the side. And when I printed over it, like, and I really looked closely, I saw that it like removed the piece and it got stuck to the... Yeah. I guess especially with the gray, like Galaxy Silver, like because it's not colorful, it like really looks like it's
It usually looks like a dent, but usually after printing a first layer over it, you won't notice anything.
Okay. Also, it will. There is a question if we're gonna have for the next trailer the full heater plus the nozzle available so people can do the like super easy hot swaps and
yes as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Okay, we have like a minute left. So let's see if there's anything else that we haven't answered.
The ETA on input shaping, you will see the printers running the firmware at our tour. And I hope we will get something out. Well, I'm still at the office.
I hope so too.
We just had a new internal build with input shaping released today with some test sample G-codes. So I was actually running it before the spring. So I have a nice quick tiny orange bolt printed. But yeah, that's been being tested. Blueprint t-shirts, Mark IV. Yes, I want those as well. You know how we have the Mark III blueprint. We need the Mark IV blueprint t-shirt. I agree.
We need it. I love the blueprint t-shirt. And the highlight of my day today was I was on a call with Adrian Boyer.
Oh, you were?
And he was unboxing
the grandfather of modern retrap.
And one of the things he unboxed was the blueprint Mark III.
Nice.
S Plus.
Nice.
I loved it.
Nice. That's nice. That's nice to hear. Yeah, if you're exactly as Christoph says, next time you're in Prague, text us. You can just send an email to info@blueshefferty.com and you can schedule a tour. Check out the biggest 3D printing farm in the world. It's a pretty cool place to visit, I'd say.
I would say so.
Yeah. Looking at the thing behind us.
Well, and you can visit different farm. Yeah. This is the AFS. Yeah. But you know, I hope all of you loved our new backdrop.
The sound is the downside, but the visual is the upside. So, you know, you have to pick, and I think it was worth it because the setting is really cool. Okay, and I guess with that, that's the hour. That's the end of the stream.
Awesome.
Okay.
So thanks, guys, for watching. Thanks, yeah. Helen, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks, guys.
And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.